You're tuned into Free 103.9's nightly Turn on the News. Daily look at radio art, radio news, media art, and media news and more. Tonight we're going to go to the FCC's open meeting and the new museum in New York. Well, we're going to preview Friday's show there. And we're going to preview a lot of other radio art events across the country. Stay tuned. And you go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more information about anything you hear here or free103.9.org. Your host tonight on Turn on the News, and we're going to go to Washington, D.C. tonight, today, for the FCC's open meeting, March 21st. There were two items on the agenda today. The FCC was initiating a rulemaking to promote interoperability in the lower 700 megahertz band. And the FCC was proposing 400 megahertz of additional spectrum for mobile broadband. First, let's go to the FCC's press release. The Federal Communications Commission today issued a notice of proposed rulemaking to promote interoperability and encourage the efficient use of spectrum in the commercial lower 700 megahertz band, 698 through 746 megahertz. The rulemaking is designed primarily to examine the interference concerns should the lower 700 megahertz band utilize a single band class for devices operating across the lower 700 megahertz ABC blocks. In the NPRM, the notice for proposed rulemaking, the FCC seeks comment on a range of technical and operational factors regarding the use of unified band class on customers of lower 700 megahertz B and C block licensees. The NPRM focuses on two interference concerns that can result with use of a single band class. One, reverse intermodulation interference from adjacent DTV Channel 51 operations, and two, blocking interference from neighboring high-powered operations in the lower 700 MHz E block. To properly evaluate the interference concerns, the FCC requests comment on measurements and quantitative analysis regarding the magnitude and extent of the interference risk from adjacent Channel 51 and lower 700 megahertz E-block transmissions, the availability of effective interference mitigation measures, relative performance of devices using a single-band class, and costs of implementing interoperability. Free Press Policy Director Matt Wood weighed in on the FCC's open meeting today with this statement. Quote, "We hope and trust that the process begun today will lead to sensible interoperability requirements for the lower 700 megahertz band and beyond. Such rules could address any legitimate technical issues, but should still prevent AT&T and Verizon from dividing this prime mobile broadband spectrum into exclusive technological enclaves. Waiting for the wireless industry to solve this problem on its own seems a vain exercise when we have already been waiting 4 years for such solutions, and none have been forthcoming from these duopoly providers. When U.S. consumers lined up for new 4G LTE-enabled iPads last week, they faced a familiar if unwelcome choice among carriers. That doesn't mean choosing the wireless provider that offers the best service in the customer's view, but literally just picking the carrier on whose network a device will even function. Manufacturers like Apple produce two incompatible versions of the same product for the U.S. market, an AT&T-only iPad and a Verizon-only iPad, and that have different types of radios built into them. Unwilling to bank solely on their ability to lock down customers and handsets by means of exclusive contracts, AT&T and Verizon have used their market clout to hardwire exclusivity into the devices. A large part of LTE's promise was the unification of technical standards. Those standards should give consumers the chance to switch providers without discarding their old phones or tablets, and give more carriers the chance to compete by offering cutting-edge devices. That has started to pay off in places like Canada, where large carriers all use the same type of spectrum and compatible radios for iPads and their other LTE offerings. The promise can pay dividends here, too, so long as the commission finishes the work it starts today. And to go with this, too, we have some recorded comments from the meeting today from the since we gave you the free press take on it. Here's the Republican Robert McDowell on the commission, the FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell, and his opinion on these issues today.
Commissioner McDowell?
Hey, Mr. Chairman. And all this beats having to fill out my second chance bracket, let me tell you that much. I'm voting today to approve today's notice of proposed rulemaking regarding interoperable communications in the lower 700 megahertz band. I thank all the interested parties for sharing their insights and marketplace experiences on this topic, and I'm grateful to the chairman for his willingness to accept edits to create a more dispassionate analysis and thereby allow for more analytical comment, and especially for the generous comment time frame. A lot of these issues are highly technical in nature, and the three of us are liberal arts majors, so we're going to need that extra time to understand all those technicalities. Although I support today's actions, I hope that all interested parties will come to the negotiating table and work in good faith to develop their own solution. Government mandates should be a last resort. That maxim is especially relevant here because minimal regulation in the wireless sector has created an environment that has maximized opportunities for investment, innovation, competition, and job creation. Before disrupting this fruitful environment with new government mandates, all stakeholders, including industry and consumers, should work as hard as they can to produce a private sector solution. An independently created interoperability framework stands far better chance of success than would a top-down government regulation. In other words, the private sector is better at this than we are. In fact, we might not be here today were it not for earlier mandates handed down in July 2007, from which I dissented.
Commissioner McDowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, of course, as we all know, Americans are consuming more of the airwaves than ever before through powerful new mobile broadband devices. Our appetite for spectrum seems insatiable. Today, the FCC takes a small but important step towards satisfying that hunger. With mobile broadband in mind, since my arrival at the Commission, I've advocated for more flexible use standards when adopting spectrum policy. The Commission has a checkered past of micromanaging spectrum use, only to find years later that technical innovation and market demands have evolved past the government's myopic view. Exploring ways to allow for dynamic uses of valuable frequencies while preventing harmful interference to other licensees and users is a laudable goal. Our notice of proposed rulemaking liberating the 2 gigahertz band, rebranding it today as AWS-4, for possible terrestrial broadband use is a step in the right direction. I commend Chairman Jenikowski for bringing forward this comprehensive deregulatory and broadly applicable proposal. But it didn't stop there. He has also put forth today's notice of inquiry on a proposed, quote, 2 gigahertz extension band concept, end quote. Now, that's not quite as catchy as AWS-4, so we'll work on the branding of that name. But anyway, but that incorporates an idea from the National Telecommunications and Information Administration to reallocate 1695 to 1710 megahertz from federal to commercial use. I look forward to learning from all interested parties on these timely proposals. And again, I thank the tireless Wireless Telecommunications Bureau, as well as the International Bureau, and as well as our friends at NTIA for all of your thoughtful and creative work on this.
You are tuned in to Turn on the News, 3.9's daily look at radio art, radio news, media news, and more. It's Muslim Gaz behind us tonight with Uzi Mahood, 12-inch. And a couple of Free 103.9 co-conspirator kind of related events coming up in New York. this summer in conjunction with the exhibition Transmittal, a transmission art exhibition in Greene County, New York, June 2nd. This workshop, June 2nd, will teach participants to unlock new sonic dimensions in an everyday object, an FM radio receiver. The workshop's called Build Your Own Radio Synthesizer Workshop. Participants will learn the basics of electronics hacking through circuit bending from New York-based artist Philip Stearns. Circuit bending is the art of creative short circuit where the electronics of a device are exposed and rewired to produce new sounds and tones. No prior electronics knowledge is required. You'll learn how to work with wire, solder, install switches and knobs. When you're finished, you'll have your own unique battery-powered radio synthesizer. Go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more information, contact information, and 3103.9.org. Also this summer, in nearby, in Hudson, New York, across the Hudson River from... workshop's in Catskill, New York. I'm sorry, I didn't say that. There's an oral history workshop this summer, Oral History Intensive, from oral historian Suzanne Snyder, who is a writer and oral historian who has worked as an interviewer for Columbia University's Center for Oral History, New York Academy of Medicine, HBO Productions, the Newton Creek Community Health and Harms Narrative Project, the Prison Public Memory Project, among others. Her oral history projects have touched upon subjects including public health, disappearing labor forces, rehabilitative medicine, and feminist presses. She's giving an intensive workshop July 13th through 22nd in Hudson, New York. Again, you can go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more information. You can also go to freepress.net/resources/event listing for all sorts of media events, including the Free Press National Conference for Media Reform. That's coming up April 5th through April 7th in Denver, Colorado. There's a global censorship conference at Yale Law School March 30th through April 1st. Again, you can go to the Free Press website for links. Nonprofit Technology Conference is April 3rd through 5th in San Francisco. All right, we're going to head to the new museum shortly after Muslim Gauze is finished and hear from Keyboard Kid and Darwin's 808s in Space. It's a preview of their show this Friday at the New Museum Theater in New York City. Thank you. This is Tom Rowe. You're listening to Turn on the News on Free 103.9. You go to free103.9.org or newsroom.free103.9.org for more information about anything you hear here. It's Muslim Gaz in the background. On this day in 1948, March 22nd, the first commercial radio program was aired simultaneously on both AM and FM stations. FM was just getting underway. It was called The Voice of Firestone. And now we're going to go to Darwin and Keyboard and 808 and Space, a preview track from their show this Friday at the New Museum in New York City.
Thank you.
That's Keyboard Kit and Darwin, preview to their show at the New Museum in New York City this Friday at the New Museum Theater. And we're going to go... we've been telling you all week the big story here at Turn on the News has been the FCC's announcement about low-power FM and the resolution they've come to about the translator issue and trying to explain what the translator issue means. A translator is a station that's not licensed to originate programming, but it's picks up programming from another main studio and relays it to a further, more remote area, usually where there's a population center. But there's been a lot of abuse with programmer stations buying up translators all over the country and stringing them together and, in effect, creating a large network and getting around certain rules. So the FCC's been trying to clear it up, and the folks at the Prometheus Radio Project created this video trying to explain the translator issue. And the good news is that the FCC announcement this week, most of the things that Prometheus talks about are kind of satisfied and addressed. So here's that recording.
Local community radio is coming to cities and towns across the country. Maybe. This January, the Local Community Radio Act was signed into a law, which means that thousands of communities will have their first chance at community radio. The new law expands low-power FM radio, also known as LPFM, to cities and towns across the United States. LPFMs are small, non-commercial radio stations that are locally run, but there's a couple of loose ends we need to tie up at the FCC before people just like you get their hands on the radio.
Right now, the FCC is trying to figure out how to deal with thousands of translator applications that have been pending for years.
Translators are small stations, under 250 watts, that repeat what's on another station. Translators were originally intended to allow full-power stations to reach more people in their area. For example, a station in a mountainous area might require a translator to reach listeners whose reception is blocked by the landscape.
Space for radio stations is limited. In 2003, the FCC let people apply for translators, and over 12,000 applications were filed. Many were from just a few applicants who were looking either to sell the translators or to create large national networks that blanket the country and repeat the same content from a single station.
These translator applications threaten to use up all the space available for low-power FM stations, especially in cities where the FM dial is already crowded. Thanks to a public outcry and a petition filed by Prometheus, the FCC froze the process to save spaces for community radio. Over 6,000 translator applications are waiting to be processed today. If the FCC let them all through, most big cities and small towns would lose their chance at community radio forever.
But the future might not be so bleak. The Local Community Radio Act requires the FCC to make sure that low-power radio makes its way into communities all over the country. The law requires the FCC to license new stations based on the needs of local communities.
To do it, the FCC needs to figure out a set of rules that balance between translators and opportunities for new low-power stations.
The FCC took a close look at the top 150 radio markets and proposed a minimum amount of LPFM stations based on the size of the market. If there is not enough room, the FCC will dismiss all of the translator applications in that city. This is called the LPFM floor. Let's look at Atlanta. In that city, the FCC determined that there is potentially room for four low-power stations.
They drew a 30 by 30 grid over the center of every market and looked for where there might be enough spaces for a low-power FM station. This revealed potential LPFM channels. Four channels are available, but the FCC set their floor at eight. Now, that does not mean that there's going to be room for eight stations, but it does mean that four stations is less than what the FCC would like to see in that size market. If the floor is not met, then those pending translator applications are dismissed. Goodbye.
But we need to make sure that the floors for low-power radio are high enough for all of our voices to be heard.
In fact, the FCC is asking the public to comment on the plan, and we have 30 days to let them know why cities and towns across the country would benefit from getting a low-power FM radio station.
That was a Prometheus video from a couple years ago. And this week, just yesterday, Brandy Doyle had this statement. We're particularly glad that the FCC has taken our recommendation to ensure that the frequencies set aside are in populated areas where they are needed. This will make a big difference in San Antonio, Sacramento, and 12 other mid-sized markets where stations too far from the city would have reached only tumbleweeds or farmland. Go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more explanation about low-power FM, translator stations, and more. And more about radio art, radio news, media art, media news, and more at newsroom.free103.9.org and free103.9.org. You're listening to Transmission Arts on Free 103.9.